A lot of buzz in the air in New Hampshire. State Senator Peter Bragdon is joining us now. Did I say that right? Bragdon, that's right.
Bragdon,
all right.
Get those hard GD syllables, yes.
All right, so Pete is here with us, and he looks like he's alive and thriving. There is an excitement. I was reading about some of the national news organizations were saying it was really boring and there wasn't anything going on. But I don't know that I agree with that. I've been in the coffee shops and the diners, and people are talking about the primary.
There's a pretty good buzz this year. I think they're comparing it probably to 4 years ago when there was an open Republican primary and open Democratic primary. So it was just, the level was just almost twice as much because you had competitive races on both sides of the ticket. You had Hillary and Obama, McCain and Romney. It was quite a show 4 years ago.
Who's your guy?
My guy's Mitt Romney.
Right.
As Senate President, I stayed neutral for a while, but about a month ago, I endorsed Governor Romney.
What was it about Romney that put you over the top?
Well, I think his leadership, his experience in the business community, his understanding of what we need to do to get this economy going again, get people back to work, both from a business perspective, an infrastructure perspective, just all the things we need to do to get people back to work.
And now with what's happened with Mitt, obviously, is I think a lot of the independents seem to be endorsing him. That's a good thing, right? Because New Hampshire, how much of the people in New Hampshire would you say are independent?
About a third to 40% of the registered voters are independent voters. They're the largest bloc in the state now. And they're significant. And I think, if you want to be able to win in November in nationwide, you need to be able to carry independents. I think New Hampshire is really the first primary/caucus where the independents really have a chance to be heard.
Yeah. How positive do you feel? I mean, this is kind of a layup question, but I'm really trying to take everyone's pulse. How positive do you feel that a Republican, whoever it ultimately is, can knock off an incumbent president who they're spinning it that the jobs are better, but I don't think that includes underemployed and a whole bunch of other statistics that we could go into. But how do you feel about that as a career politician, really?
I don't know if I'm a career politician. In New Hampshire, we're paid $100 a year for our work, so it's wouldn't we call it a career. I think that the incumbency certainly has its advantages and its disadvantages, and if things aren't going well or if things are stagnant, they have their disadvantages, and I think the strongest card that Romney can play is the economy, what's happening or not happening with the economy. And I think you're right. The numbers look a tiny, tiny bit better, but there's a lot of people out of work, a lot of people discouraged, and we really need something to spur economic growth in this country.
Yeah. Looking at what you're doing in New Hampshire, because you're pushing for right to work, right? Isn't that right? Right to work is a big issue. What are your thoughts on right to work in New Hampshire?
Well, it's funny. It's something that came up in the Senate about a year ago, and somebody asked me about it yesterday, and honestly, I haven't thought about it in a year, so I can't even remember what the various points were. I remember voting for it and to have a big policy debate on it. I'm not in a good position to do that, but there certainly are a number who feel that that is a factor that will lead to economic growth. There's certainly some argument about that, but I think the bigger factors are we just need to have environments within each state, within New Hampshire certainly, that encourage companies to come here and to grow. Companies that grow and succeed are the ones that hire people, and that's what we really need to have, however we achieve that.
Yeah, do you feel like if we expand it beyond, go back now to beyond the boundaries of New Hampshire, that we're over-regulated and just too much red tape for the businessman, entrepreneurs, small businesses, whatever you want to call it?
I think in some ways there are. Obviously, we need some regulation in place for the critical policy areas that we have, but sometimes we get so stuck in the regulations that it prevents us from moving forward. So it really needs someone to take a look at it and say, okay, are we double regulating things? We had an issue in New Hampshire where the ski areas, they would take water out of the river to make their snow, and the state has a compelling interest to make sure that the water levels are good and the quality is clean. And they'd have to buy all this expensive pumping and metering equipment to regulate that. They would take it out of the river, they'd put it in their holding ponds, and the next night it was spread on the as snow on the slopes. And the state was requiring all the same equipment to be installed when they take it out of the pond that they just took it out of the river the day earlier. So we just took away that regulation and said there's duplicating regulations here. We want to know what you're taking out of the river. We don't really care what you're taking out of your pond because it all came from the river in the first place.
Right.
So it's even minor things like that. They all add flat up after a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah. Do you, in looking at this election, we talked about the independents and the importance of the independents, and I think people don't realize this. In your primaries, if you're an independent, you can vote.
You can vote in the primaries, and it has an open primary, and that's why I think it's a key indicator of how someone will do in November is the ability to track the independent votes, because come November, that's going to be the critical decision between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
And there's no way to forecast that, really, in New Hampshire. It could go either way.
Just a lot of polling, but the polling, you just never know what percentage of independents are going to turn out. The Republicans are going to turn out, generally speaking. The independents are going to turn out in a lower number because they have various levels of passion for the various parties. So it's tough in polling to get the right mix of independents in the poll. So.
Is there a pride factor to being first? Because that used to be the thing. Wasn't it first and right or something like that?
Well, I'm not sure, but we certainly love being first in New Hampshire for the presidential primary. And another thing I'm focusing on, too, is calling attention during the presidential primary process to the needs for infrastructure. In this country, we do not have a plan for infrastructure. The last plan we had was the interstate highway system 50 years ago. Other countries, India, China, even Canada, are investing more in infrastructure than we are into a 21st century infrastructure, including data and broadband and all the things that are going to be needed to make companies succeed.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get the candidates to talk about that as well.
Yeah, why don't we have an infrastructure? Wouldn't you think that'd be obvious you're building and we're getting bigger?
You know,
and
we
more
have
people?
One. We're just not taking care of it, and we don't have a plan for it. And so because we don't have a plan, we're just throwing money all over the place using a formula 50 years old. So the organization I'm with, Building America's Future, BAFuture.org, is a bipartisan group. BAFuture.org.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is to call attention to infrastructure and get a national plan for infrastructure so we're not wasting our money.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten so far to that? Because I would think pretty good.
Very positive, because building infrastructure is great for economic development. You have the short-term jobs created as the infrastructure is built, but New Hampshire ships $30 billion a year worth of product a year over the highways. If you have good highways, you have more companies coming, and you have jobs created that last a long time beyond when the project is done.
Yeah. What's the primary industry in New Hampshire overall?
Well, the defense contractors are a big piece of what we have. It used to be a lot of textiles, a lot of shoes, a lot of high-tech. And now it's a lot of high-tech military-type things, a lot of military contractors in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Do you feel like, one of the things is, as soon as I was coming up here, do you know what somebody said to me? Well, if you're going to get an iPad or buy anything, do it now. New Hampshire, for no sales tax. And coming from Dallas, where you're talking about almost
9%
is huge.
Yep.
So that, I didn't even really think about that, but that is one of the things that is attractive, I'm sure, to people coming here.
If you head south from New Hampshire and cross into Massachusetts, just before the Massachusetts line, if you get off the highway and go down the highways there, all right north of the border, retail all over the place. No sales tax, just draws people from across the borders. It's a big boom to New Hampshire's economy.
Wrapping this up, we talk about the demographics and whatnot, there is, and the pride of being first, why is this such a political state? People just have hard opinions and they want to talk about
it? Yeah, no, I think they've gotten used to having that first in the nation status, and they really come to expect the candidates to come to them, and it becomes part of the ethos of the state, I think.
Peter, it was a pleasure to sit here and talk to you. Bogdan, right?
Bragdon.
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 Oh,
you almost got it.
Bragdon.
You almost got it.
Bragdon. You know what? I can pronounce all these hockey players' names.
Well.
I can't read my chicken scratch. Pete, thanks so much. I appreciate
glad
it.
To
look forward
here.
To talking to you in the future.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks. Of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis.
but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for the enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, "It's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel." Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
What happened, man? You used to be energetic, happy, and wow, did the ladies love you. Now, you fall asleep on the couch, irritable, and out of shape. Don't be that guy. Call now for a risk-free trial of Ageless Male, a natural supplement shown to raise testosterone by 50% and maintain healthy, normal levels. No injections, no appointments. With healthy testosterone levels, you can feel that energy again, that great outlook again, and yes, even a healthy sex drive. Right now, you can try Ageless Male risk-free. There's nothing to lose, guys. If you're a man who's noticed changes in your body, your mood, your sex life, call now for a risk-free trial of Ageless Male. Be the guy you used to be. Just call 1-888-246-0623. Don't wait another day. Just call 1-888-246-0623. Again, 1-888-246-0623.
Welcome back to Radio Row with me, Kate Delaney, and of course, Coast to Coast and all those nooks and crannies in between. We're pleased to be joined by, from Michigan, Congressman Bill Huizinger.
Yes, very good.
Yes. I did the
just like it sounds. H-U-I-Z-E-N-G.
I was telling someone this the other day. I used to do hockey. And so can you imagine those names? Your name is Pizza Cake.
It's not Russian.
Right, exactly. Congressman, let me ask you this, because I have a lot of passionate callers from all over Michigan, and they're so concerned about the economy. They're so concerned, as you know, obviously, the auto industry.
Yeah.
You still have the after effects of that. Before we get into anything else, how do you feel about the where you're headed with the economy in that state?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We just announced unemployment rates. My home county of Ottawa County, which is just outside of Grand Rapids, announced a 6.5% unemployment rate, which has been low, beyond low, for us over the last number of years. Michigan's moving in the right direction, and I would argue that actually it's uniquely positioned because we had a very difficult decade under the Granholm administration. There was a lot of different directions. The automotive industry suffered, and we saw our businesses go and get smarter and leaner and in many ways be prepared for this recovery uniquely that a lot of the other states are not.
And so when you say that, what did you do uniquely? How did you recover from that?
Well, you know, part of it was that just simply business, you know, not saying government did this. I'm saying businesses had to go in and retool. I'm a small business owner. I have a small sand and gravel company, which is connected to my family's. My dad and my uncle had started a ready-mix concrete company, very dependent on construction. That went away dramatically. And, you know, I've had to figure out how am I buying my fuel differently? How are we having the guys work differently? What are we doing to make ourselves more efficient? Not depending on anybody else and certainly not the government to help me out. Making sure that, my partner, my cousin Bruce and I have the ability to go in and say, okay, we got to retool here a little bit. We got to think differently. We saw a number of those suppliers, who had been automotive suppliers predominantly, start saying, okay, wait a minute, I can no longer supply to the auto industry. I can no longer supply to the office furniture industry. We've got Hayworth, Herman Miller, and Steelcase all in the area as well. So guess what? They're in mining and drilling. They've started to branch out, do things differently. And I think that's the kind of mindset that we have to have.
Talk about mindset. One of the things that's very frustrating to the people that call, and as I've mentioned to you, really my Michigan base, a lot of people call up and they're frustrated. They feel like there's such a log jam in D.C. that nothing is getting done. There's that perception that you're doing nothing. Yeah. You're getting on C-SPAN, you're grandstanding about whatever. How do you get through that? How do you cut through that log jam?
Well, in many ways, this is an emphasized area, and you think about this in your own personal life. It's a lot easier to carp about somebody if you don't have a relationship with them, right? And I don't care if you're in your own family or, and I have so many people say to me, oh, I could never do what you do, all this politics. And I say, okay, are you a member of a family, a church, a school board? You're involved in politics too. And it really boils down to relationships. And we don't have the opportunity to build those relationships in many ways. And then we don't look for it. And there's more that happens under the surface than most people realize, but frankly, mainstream media looks at it and says, "Well, we'd rather report the blood and guts getting spilled on the floor because that's much more fun." And I think that is an epidemic that's been happening, but that doesn't explain all of it. Certainly there is this philosophical divide, and I think this is a kind of a crossroads for the country. We're trying to figure out what is that philosophical direction that we're going to go.
Dealing with in Congress now, dealing with in February, of course, the payroll tax cut. I call it the Band-Aid. Let's face it, it was a Band-Aid. So then you come back in February.
And dumb, frankly. I mean, how do we go about and do 2 months of tax policy at a time? This makes absolutely no sense. They don't even have the courtesy to match it up with my quarterly tax filing. So what am I going to have? 2 months of tax policy one way and another month another way? It's crazy. But anyway.
So what do you think happens in that debate when you get back? I mean, because there's now a deadline again.
Sure, right? Again, another deadline. This drove me nuts. A certain senator from New York, as he was sitting up in New York, I was watching him while I'm in Washington, and he's saying, all the House of Representatives has to do is pass this two-month extension, and I'll be the first one on an airplane back to Washington, and we'll work on this day one, solving this for the entire year. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, I got an idea. How about getting your butt on a plane now and coming down, and you can be part of the conference committee back in December, because guess what? We're going to be dealing with the exact same issues, whether it's December or whether it's February, that brought us to that crisis point. And, the American people, for those that are employees, the unemployed employers, they're looking at it going, okay, so really you can't tell me what's going to be happening with unemployment insurance in starting in March? Really you can't tell me what's going to be happening with the Social Security payroll tax cut? In 2 months out, you really can't tell me whether my doctor or healthcare provider is going to be reimbursed through Medicare.
Right.
I mean, it's ludicrous, and I think that's been the problem. Frankly, has been a lack of ability to get long-term decisions made, and that's what we're trying to change around.
What about mentioning and talking about things that people care about? Obviously, the Supreme Court's taken up the individual mandate with what we currently have for health care. Your thoughts on that?
Well, as I look at it and I read it, I think that, one, I'm glad, and I will actually agree with the administration on this, I'm glad that they decided not to prolong this and continue to have, these lower courts have sort of these split decisions and request that it go to the Supreme Court. What I've heard is that they're going to literally take days of testimony on this, which is very unusual. I mean, the Supreme Court typically goes in and hears a case, it gets an hour, and they're talking days
right.
Of reviewing this case. case. So I think it's proper, though, and in my opinion, I think that the court should rule that the federal government doesn't have the ability to come in and mandate you and I as individuals to go do any particular action as significant as this.
Right. Are you for smaller government versus bigger regulations? What's your...
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know... There's a couple of things as a small business owner and as I talk to other business owners. Here's what I hear. One, we need access to credit. All right, we need the ability to do this. And Dodd-Frank and a number of these other rules and regulations have just put these burdens on. And it's not these big multinational banks and international banks. It's the small community banks, the guys that I have a relationship with, who are having that burden foisted on them. Yeah, the second thing that we need is consumer confidence. You know, we need to feel a little better about where we're at, and people can feel like the rug's going to get pulled out from under them. But probably the third thing is certainty. You know, that certainty that is out there, that needs to be out there as someone who's trying to make long-term business decisions. I have a 12-year-old loader, all right, a front-end loader that I got to replace in my gravel pit. This is a significant investment for me. It's $250,000 investment, and I'm looking at it, and I don't know what my tax structure is. I don't know what my regulatory structure is. I don't know what my health care costs are going to be. I don't know what my fuel costs are going to be. And I sort of sit back and go, let's just wait. You know, and that uncertainty, you take that and magnify it by many, many times, and you have much more significant companies than the one that I own, who are basically parking their cash on the side and saying, hey, we're just going to wait and see what's going to happen here first.
Let me ask you this last one, because I know everybody's going to be pawing at you here in the bullpen. Who's your guy? Who's your guy in this thing?
Yeah, I just literally just yesterday came out in favor of Mitt Romney, and I've got a relationship. I wanted to go and meet all of the candidates again. 4 years ago, I served as the district chairman for our congressional district when I was a state legislator as well. And I had worked for my predecessor, Peter Hoekstra, as his district director. So I've been around a number of these people for quite a while. But I wanted to give them, you know, Herman Cain and Rick Perry and some of these other people kind of a fair shot. But as I look at it, I think Mitt has got the unique set of experiences both in the private sector as well as that public policy executive side of things that he's going to be able to present a view and a direction that we desperately need here in the country.
And you think it's Mitt? You think that the polls say that? I mean, just, you know, all the way down the line. Of course, we have all these primaries.
Yeah. Well, and certainly you got to have a few things. One, you've got to have grassroots passion. All right.
Right.
But there are plenty of people out there that have grassroots passion, but they don't have the infrastructure and the fundraising and all those other things on that other side to sustain that.
Right.
Then there's the other side, which is people have all kinds of cash, but they don't have that grassroots side of things.
Right.
And you know, if that were the case, it would be President Forbes, and, you know, we can all come up with these examples.
Sure.
of people that simply haven't been able to buy their way into this. You've got to have that combination. And I think that as I look at it, Mitt has got a complete package when it comes to, you know, ground game and support throughout all the different states that are hosting these primaries, these early primaries. Michigan's is February 28th. Maybe it'll be wrapped up by then, but he certainly has the resources, and he's gone through this. There's nothing quite like going through this experience.
True, that is true.
To teach you where some of the pitfalls are.
Congressman, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on America Tonight.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Sure, there are winter specials, and then there are super winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Battle through this cold and flu season with powerful, natural, and safe flu fighters like elderberry power, orticillin, olive leaf capsules, grapefruit seed extract, and Respirit 8, all specially priced during the winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't forget vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, HerbalHealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, sale priced at only $9. We also have a super winter special on 6 homeopathic liquid detoxes: whole body detox, liver detox, kidney detox, lymph detox, brain detox, and lung detox. All liquid detoxes, regularly $26.95, are now just $20. HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on now and save big when you hit the winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are The GCN Radio Network.
Listeners, it's Jason Lewis, and now that the holidays have come and gone, it's time to get serious about our New Year's resolutions. For 2012, resolve to protect your most valuable asset, your family. Daily, we hear about all the crazy stuff happening around the world, unemployment, food shortages, natural disasters, just to name a few. For my preparation, I recommend WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com offers delicious ready-made meals like cheesy lasagna and savory stroganoff that are packaged for freshness in individual metal Mylar pouches and carry a 25-year shelf life. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com today to request a free entree sample. And for a limited time, enter the promo code Lewis to get no-cost shipping on any order. That's WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE. That's 855-366-3947 and enter promo code Lewis for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Peace of mind, the greatest gift you can give to the ones you love.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. Utopiasilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now UtopiaSilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details on your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
Behold, here we are in little old New Hampshire, site of the first primary, and talk radio news, the true insiders, as I always say, are here, Johnny on the spot. The whole crew is here, and you've heard them, and we've got one of my favorites, of course, Victoria Jones is with us. Victoria, how are you, first of all?
I'm good. I'm psyched. I've got coffee. I'm waiting to get bacon, and I'm so, you know, I'm excited.
All right. What's the thing with bacon with you?
You know, I never have bacon at home. I don't allow bacon in the house because I would just eat it, and it would just be disastrous. So I only allow myself bacon when I'm on a road trip.
Oh, now it makes sense. I understand.
So it's like a real thrill.
And I want to tell everybody, just so they know, the reason that I have a special place for Victoria in my heart is because she got me my... She's the first person who ever fetched me a cup of coffee, besides my mother.
Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding me?
Because I was tethered. This is radio, but I was tethered to the equipment, and she saw me, and she knew. She thought, that woman needs some coffee. I'm going to go run and get it.
I've sat on that side, and I know what it's like, and there's nothing you can do. You are absolutely stuck, and you could be there. You could be there till 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so let me ask you this question. You cover the White House, and day in and day out, half the time you're there. Big shakeup at the White House.
Yes.
Talking about the new chief of staff. I was listening to is what some people were talking about. They're saying, well, he's not really political, so this is perfect because that's not what he's going to do. So that's the whole idea, because for this year you got David Axelrod and Robert Gibbs, who, of course, are away from there in Chicago, away from the White House, and he'll just do his job. Why Daley out, first of all?
Because Daley apparently wanted to go. Daley had already had some of his responsibilities taken away and given to Pete Rouse, of whom I'm a big fan. Pete Rouse, who's a very sort of homely guy, but who has Maine Coon cats. And so I'm a big fan of Pete Rouse. But and who is also a not very political guy, people say, but who is a very good manager.
Right.
So a lot of his work had been given to him. But Bill Daley is not seen as a good manager in this sense. So he wasn't apparently getting the job done. And Rahm Emanuel, whatever you think of him, really knew how to manage, really knew how to get the job done. And Bill Daley, it was not working out in that sense,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know I think the ins and outs will become clear in the next couple of weeks. So Jack Lew, it looks like, is going to be the guy who is moving into this particular position. Jack Lew, who had a committee hearing, and again, I haven't been as plugged in as I normally would be because I'm here,
right.
Said at a hearing that deregulation did not cause the financial crisis. Mm. He's head of the Office of Management and Budget. Now, I have to say, my dealings with Jack Lew, when I've asked him questions at press conferences, I've always found his answers to be pretty on point and found him to be a very sharp guy. But you can be a very sharp guy at the Office of Management and Budget, and I don't know how you're going to do as Chief of Staff. Chief of Staff is a really tough job.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and actually, that's interesting. I talked to Andy Card one time. We had a long conversation off
really?
The record and on the record, and that was interesting. I wish I could tell you some of the off the record stuff, but I thought that, and I've talked to White House press secretaries and chiefs of staff who have worked for both Republicans and Democrats. You know what? One thing they have in common, they're exhausted.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think they ever get any sleep.
They don't, because they often have their first meetings at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
These are, the chief of staff is there, you know, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, and they almost have to be there before everybody else. It's kind of like in Victorian days in England, you know, the maids were sweeping the chimneys, getting everything going, getting the fires going like 4 or 5 o'clock, so that the rooms were warm before people got up. This is what the chief of staff is like. You got to get the room warm before people get up.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's what they're doing.
You and I talked before we went on the air. You were giving me some interesting nuggets, and one of the things that you told me is, you know, I jump all over the whole Ahmadinejad regime and what's happening in Iran and whatnot. That's a big topic here on America Tonight, and why should we be concerned about Iran? And you mentioned something interesting to me. Apparently, they don't like Google. Tell the listeners, what did they say?
All I heard was a tweet from the BBC, which they have tweeted that Google is not a search engine, it's an espionage tool.
Well, that's how I feel when I can't get what I need.
I'm telling you, I know.
You got to love that. All right, speaking of espionage, what's interesting about New Hampshire and all these stops along the way, and people don't realize this, I mean, it's a done deal that Obama's the guy for the Democrats, is the incumbent.
Right.
We know that, of course. So, but there's lots of Democrats crawling around all over the place getting the lay of the land, and that's part of the deal. You kind of, I don't know if it's spy, but you do reconnaissance, in a sense, to find out what's happening. What are the issues? What are people talking about? Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. You do, because these are people who want to know what it is that's going to be important. I mean, certainly in Iowa, which, you know, has now ceased to exist as a state of interest for the next 4 years, basically.
Right.
In Iowa, the Obama campaign had 8 statewide offices and have made something like 350,000 phone calls. So they were very serious about this, and that was before they get into the general, when they're going to get even more serious and be expanding. So in New Hampshire, I'm not sure I don't remember the numbers because I don't have a visual memory,
right.
But they're already very spread out, very serious. So they're doing this in all these states. They are on the ground already asking questions. So we've had Democrats coming through our Radio Row, even though this Radio Row is really primarily a Republican one, but we've had Democrats coming through too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in watching what's happening with the president, one of the things that's talked about, and we talked about this a bunch on the show, is how crazy it is how much money you need to be able to make a run for president. You talk about the PAC money, Romney getting couple of million dollars, $1 million check here, $1 million check there. And a lot was made about the president and his war chest and the fact that he got, they, you know, was said that there's $1 billion floating around for Obama. And now all of a sudden, there was no play on that. They weren't too sensitive about it. Now all of a sudden, they're very sensitive about that. Is that because of the issue that people are saying, oh, that's ridiculous, these PACs and the money? So he's trying to kind of back away from that?
I think he's trying to back away from that. And I've actually heard a couple of bits of conversation to the effect that maybe he doesn't have that much.
Ooh.
I don't know whether that's true or not, and I'm going to sneeze.
Uh-oh. Yeah, it's because it's Radio Row. Who knows
Radio
what's flying
Row.
Around out
oh,
here?
Goodness knows. And you don't even have any sanitizer. We've got sanitizer.
Stealing
left,
sanitizer so. From another table.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It,
without a doubt, because you're at the White House, like I said, almost every day. They do. They use a lot of sanitizer at the White House. So when you're there and when you get the daily briefings, let's say Jay Carney comes out, so much of the focus seems to be the economy. I mean, that's what it is. It's because of that's going to be the platform for Obama. That's what everybody's concerned about in the country, right? Without a doubt, it's all about that.
It's so interesting. I look at my, I review my notes because I try to take contemporaneous, pretty much verbatim notes, but it's difficult to keep up. But I take contemporaneous notes, and I look at them afterwards. And it's the theme is it's economy, 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 and then interspersed you'll get Iran, North Korea. This, you know, other question. But then it'll come back economy, back economy, back economy. That's always the theme. Unless there's some other ridiculous meme going on that the front row is talking about.
Right.
That nobody else can get a question in edgeways to.
Right.
But it's always the economy, some aspect of the economy. And it's fascinating because sometimes you hear stories about how, oh, Obama's not focused on the economy and we need to focus on the economy and the president needs, you know, why doesn't the president focus on the economy? And if you were in these briefings, you would realize that's all that's talked about in the White House.
Not everything else, not all the other things that are going on somewhere.
Tomorrow, for example, on Wednesday, the president and vice president are hosting a forum on insourcing American jobs, investing in insourcing American jobs here in the United States rather than outsourcing American jobs. They're doing that.
Wow. And that's what we talk about constantly, too, about the jobs.
Right.
The jobs outsourcing versus
right.
Made in America and everything else.
Now, will it get press coverage? Who knows? I mean, it's not a big day to get a lot of press coverage because of the results of the New Hampshire primary. But it doesn't matter. They will plug on doing something like that.
Now, do you find, too, that always, because this is fascinating, I think, to people listening, being inside the White House, do you find that there, without a doubt, there's just one point and it's like the outrage of the day and reporters have to ask that question? So that sort of becomes the theme, even if Carney and even if the administration doesn't want that out there.
Yes, I find that some reporters ask that question or have to ask that question. You can never tell whether they want to or whether they've got editors telling them to ask that question. It's mostly the front row and some of the second row, although not so much the second row, because you've got reporters from NPR who usually have their own theme, which is usually quite interesting, actually.
Right.
And then you've got print. You've got New York Times, Washington Post, and some of these others who are off on their own tack.
Right.
Which might be the same, but might be quite different. But the front row generally, which is the TV networks, they're usually all on the same topic. And it may be or may not be what Carney wants to talk about. Very often isn't. But it's always the same. And they all have different iterations of the same question. It's like, really?
Did you just ask? Well, because they want to use their question.
They do. They do. And it's frustrating from a point of view of news because there's so much
to talk about that you could ask.
Going on. Exactly.
Yeah.
But recently, Carney has started jumping around the room. So you do get more variety. And even on that same topic, if they go to Huffington Post, if they go to Roll Call, if they go to Congressional Quarterly, whether particularly Roll Call and Congressional Quarterly, or if they go to the National Journal, where you've got real seasoned print reporters, they will ask actually really intelligent questions.
Right. Do you find that...
Or Bloomberg.
Do the TV people get preference? Do the TV people, the ABCs,
yes.
The CBSs,
yes,
the CNNs, the front row?
Absolutely. They always go to the front row first.
Because
yeah.
of TV. TV
yeah.
beats... Radio beats, beats
radio
newspaper.
Is third, actually, in theory. Yeah,
fourth.
Because he always forgets radio. These people don't own radios.
Yeah, exactly. What about bloggers? They don't exist.
Bloggers get asked a little bit, but they don't really exist.
But
radio does get taken notice of a little bit by Jay Carney. He is aware of us. He comes to me.
Right.
Because he already knew me because I interviewed him. So he comes to me. We've had conversations, and, you know, he says, you know, you ask... You asked for a little bit of
Oh, so that's good.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Behind the mic with Victoria Jones. I love that insight into the White House press corps. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alli-C. Why Alli-C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alli-C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alli-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alli-C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alli-C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alli-C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alli-C. For more information and to order Alli-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alli-C today.
Folks, have you lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get ready for the winter power outages ahead. Here's why. Solar power generators are now available from our friends at Solutions from Science, one of our oldest sponsors. Their emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Whether it's ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out this winter, you'll be ready with a solar power generator from Solutions from Science. Go to MySolarBackup.com for more information. That's MySolarBackup.com or call 877-327-0365.
Kate Delaney, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. And, of course, we have affiliates that touch the Staten Island crowd, WICC in Connecticut, and a few others, too, as well. We get a lot of New Yorkers that call the show, as well as some of our favorite people from the Midwest and the South. The show is basically syndicated, of course. And we've got Congressman Michael Grimm with us now. He represents Staten Island. He was very quick to correct me that he also represents Brooklyn, because when you're in New York, you got to really be careful about the boroughs and what you say so everybody knows exactly who you're talking about. And the accents are so different. I used to, Congressman, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And here we are in Radio Row in Manchester, New Hampshire. I used to be on WFAN in New York, and I could always, I got good at, you know, because I grew up partially in New York, I got good at the accent. So before anyone called, I already knew who was from Staten Island and who was from Brooklyn and who was from Manhattan.
I just want to go on record and say I don't have an accent.
Yeah, no accent whatsoever. I can't detect one at all. So, you know, here you are in New Hampshire. Who are you? Who's your guy? Is it Romney?
Governor Mitt Romney, you got it.
I knew it. You had that look about you. I thought you said Mitt Romney. I thought I heard you say that. So why Mitt? Because, you know, people listening will say, and because this is, of course, moving on, South Carolina, et cetera, pretty much we feel done deal, New Hampshire. So now you got to set your sights down the road. What is it about that drew you to Romney?
Well, very, very early on, and I took a lot of heat for coming out so early for any candidate. You know, a lot of my constituents felt I should have waited. But I, you know, being a former FBI agent, I pride myself on my analytical skills. And when I analyzed the race very early on, it was very apparent to me that Governor Mitt Romney is the only one that's actually electable. He's the only one that can beat President Obama. So that's extremely important to me, is electability. And then when you look at his experience, he has exactly what I'm looking for and what I think this country is craving and desperately needs. The combination of the executive experience as a governor, especially when it worked across the aisle with a Democratic electorate, and 25 years private sector experience. To me, that is invaluable, and that's exactly what this country needs to get the economy moving and get people back to work.
Do you see that we were talking about this, and I mean, you know, you're not going to complain about this because this is what you do for a living, but people, you see what happened with Romney the other day where the whole firing thing got discombobulated, but all people see is the headline, and right. You know how that's easy to fall into that trap. Do you think he recovered after that so-called stumble?
Absolutely. I think it'll draw attention and give him the opportunity to say the things that people want to hear. Listen, everywhere I go, and I know everywhere the governor has gone, he hears the same thing. People are furious and to some extent disgusted, and rightfully so, that the bureaucrats and Washington and the government, no one is held accountable.
Right.
And you've got to remember, he's speaking in the context of running for president, not CEO of some corporation. He's talking about the government, and we need to hold bureaucrats accountable. And if you're not doing your job, you should be fired. And that's a good thing about capitalism and a private sector mentality, that if you can't cut the mustard, if you're not doing your job, you should be held accountable and you should be fired.
So in one of the things that I know that you're big on, and you mentioned your background with the FBI, is you're tough on crime. And to New Yorkers, that's a big deal, obviously.
Huge.
You saw what happened with Giuliani, and
Absolutely. He
gets the credit for cleaning up the city, and now you see again the threats with terror. I was there 9/11, unfortunately. Obviously, you know, and that hits close to home.
I was a 9/11 first responder. I was a special agent at the time.
Wow.
So it's very personal for me. It's very visceral. I'm also a combat veteran of the Marine Corps. So the threats that this country faces are very real. They're very substantial. You know, and that's one of the reasons why someone like a Ron Paul is someone I couldn't support regardless. The way he talks about Iran and minimizes the threat of nuclear weapons in the hands of Iran is, quite frankly, it scares me. And it's certainly not what I would want at the helm and the commander-in-chief.
Yeah. But, you know, this is always an argument about in New York about guns, because our gun laws, of course, across the country are different depending on where you're from and a whole slew of other things. Where do you stand on the gun issue?
Well, overall, I'm extremely supportive of the Second Amendment. And I go to bat for the Second Amendment as often as I can. The reciprocity bill that just came up, I voted against, though, which would seem opposite my usual position. But the reason is because of large cities like New York. When I spoke with the commissioner, when I spoke with the mayor, when I spoke to my friends in law enforcement in New York City, it's dangerous. When you look at the millions and millions of people that are so closely crowded on the streets of New York, if we have 18 and 19-year-olds from the South carrying their guns while they're here on vacation, the New York City Police Department is not trained to deal with that, and I think it's dangerous, and I think it will end up... And again, I'm not saying that they would commit crimes. What I'm saying is the New York City police officer sees them wearing a gun and reacts accordingly, according to the training they've had, and that could lead to something.
Right.
The other thing is New York City... Because of its size and because of just, it's a tough town.
Right.
You know, the chances of someone bumping into you and maybe a normal scuffle where you would just walk away, when you're carrying a gun, it's now a lethal brush up.
Right.
And that's why I had to vote against it. It was not in the best interest of my district. But overall, I very strongly support the Second Amendment.
How does an FBI guy decide to seg in, obviously... A lot of people will make that transition, whether it's through law or whether it's through, you know, being in the courtroom or being on the streets or like you in the FBI. But why'd you make that segue into politics? What drew you into politics?
Well, I never had aspirations, really. I wasn't looking at a political career at all. But in 2000, I had left the FBI, started my own small business, and was struggling to make a living. I mortgaged my house. I put everything into my business. And in 2009, 2 years into my being an entrepreneur, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, went on an apology tour. Now, as someone that has served in combat and someone that went deep undercover with the FBI, I can tell you that I was outraged, and I could not just sit by and allow that to happen. So I had to become engaged, and I had to do something positive to turn that around. I felt I could be most effective and have the best voice as a member of Congress, and that's why I ran.
So, and here you are, and you're obviously stumping for Mitt Romney, and you gave us the reasons why in the beginning. I think it's Romney, but if it wasn't Romney, would you go with who the Republican candidate is, as long as it wasn't Ron Paul?
Yes. Obviously, I think almost anyone can do a better job than the current president. This current president must be a one-term president, period. But that's why I'm here in New Hampshire, and I'm working so hard for Mitt Romney. We can't afford to lose this election. Unfortunately, if Mitt Romney was not our candidate, the only alternative is President Barack Obama, in my opinion, statistically, analytically speaking.
Right. And you looked at that. When we see what's happening in Congress, how do you feel about always taking the blame? Because, of course, that's what the president does. He says, it's Congress. They're jobbing us. They're nothing's going through because Congress, they're just fighting me. That's the problem, folks. And it's point. It is, and it's point. And you know that. So,
fortunately, I have broad shoulders, and I know the truth. The reality is, look, it's very smart for the president to do that. He's a smart candidate. He's an excellent candidate. He's a horrible president because he has no leadership skills, but he's a very good candidate. And that's what a good candidate would do. He knows he can't run on his own failed record. So he's pointing the finger and trying to claim a broken Congress. He's the one that's polarizing the Congress. He's the one that's failed to lead. And ultimately, I think that the people of this great nation will hold him accountable.
You just saw what happened with the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta. And, of course, the automatic trigger in talking about that. How does that make you feel when we look at...
I'm extremely concerned. We live right now in one of the most dangerous worlds in our lifetime by far. And it's evolving, and it's becoming more dangerous. You know, the Middle East is on fire. We have no idea what will happen in the Middle East. All that stability that we had in Egypt after 30 years is over. Obviously, Iran speaks for itself. But even Chavez throughout Central and South America, who knows how much that will spread as he's using terrorism to his benefit. I mean, we can go on and on with the threats that we have and then the instability in Europe because of their own economic downturns. We live in a dangerous world, and the last thing we should be doing is lowering our military to all-time lows.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous, and it's one of the things that keeps me up at night.
I agree with you there. That keeps me up at night, too. And lots of listeners here in your district, in your area, that call the show, and across the country,
no
the
question.
Same thing that people are so, so concerned about. And I don't think it's just necessarily only Republicans either, by
no,
the way.
No, absolutely
Democrats,
not.
Forget the labels. I think that, in general, we're seeing that absolutely across the board. All right, so here you are in Radio Row, and they got you moving around all over the place. I think you were doing some TV.
Yes.
Can tell you got the TV makeup on,
right? I do.
Right?
I'm going to take that off now because I don't have TV until later on.
Well, the biggest question is, of course, because when I was in New York, I was doing, besides now I'm doing the political show, but I was doing a lot of sports on WFAN. Are you a Giants fan or are you a Jets fan?
I have to admit I'm a Jets fan.
Jets.
But
Rex Ryan, what happened?
I will refuse to speak about the Jets right now. I am pleading the fifth. However, I am supporting the Giants since the Jets aren't there. I'm not one of those. See, this.
You're like a Hillary Clinton, but at least it's in the same city.
Exactly. It's still my hometown, and, you know, I'm a Yankees fan, but if the Mets are in there and the Yankees aren't, I root for the Mets.
You're a delight. Congressman Grimm.
Thank you
it was
so
nice
much.
To meet you. I hope our paths cross again. Thank you.
I surely will. Thank you.